G'day there, I'm Mark Brax, the MotoGP pit lane commentator. Keep listening to the MotoGP OD for all the latest news, and we'll see you soon. Take it easy.
The lights are on red. We're away.
Hello and welcome to MotoGPOD, the internet radio show about motorcycle road racing, the greatest sport on the planet. Today is August 3rd, 2007, and this is episode number 89. I am Bob Hayes, your host, here today, as always, to bring you some of the newest, coolest stuff about MotoGP. And we got a really cool show today. We've got some exciting stuff. We've got an interview with Mark Brax, who's the pit commentator from the Dorna Sports and MotoGP.com sort of official commentary that they got going on. He was nice enough to spend some time on the phone with us. That's a really cool interview. Jules Cizek helped put all that together. Really grateful to Jules. Really grateful to Mark for the time that we got there on the phone. I think that's going to be fun. Before that, we got a little bit of news, as always. There's some exciting stuff that's been happening in MotoGP this past week. So we'll talk a little bit about that and even a little bit about World Super Duper bikes, because there is other forms, believe it or not, you know, other forms of motorcycle racing besides MotoGP, and it's all good stuff. It's all exciting. It's all worth watching. But we mostly talk about MotoGP. But we're talking a little bit about World Superbikes. Got some news, like I said. And then we'll also have a Pepsi Challenge. The eyes had it, so to speak. I got quite a few emails. I think it was about seven. And I got no emails that said, don't do it. And I got those seven odd that said, yes, go ahead and do it. So I figured, hey, what the hell? I'll do it again. I like doing the Pepsi Challenge. It was good stuff. So we're going to compare and contrast the Eurosport commentary, the MotoGP.com/Dorna commentary, and the Fox commentary of the Laguna Seca round of MotoGP. That was good stuff. And we also have a contest this week. You will have to listen to the entire show, and I will give you the details for the contest there at the end of the show. But believe me, it's pretty cool. We're giving away a poster. It's neat stuff, actually more than one poster. I'm giving away six posters, and it's fun. It's neat. It's cool. It's a fun poster, so check it out, and I will give you those details there at the end of the show. Other administrative stuff. Let's see. I want to say a special thank you to Eric Lawrence for his contribution to MotoGPOD. Thank you very much, Eric. Your contribution will help pay for bandwidth and postage and all kinds of other things, that the bills that are incurred with the podcast, because it is not free. So Eric was kind enough to go to the MotoGPOD.com website and click on the handy little PayPal link there. It's fun for you. It's fun for me. Everybody has fun when you donate to MotoGPOD. But in any event, I make light of it, and that's not very fair. Thank you very much, Eric. I do appreciate it a lot. That's cool stuff. Other than that, I think we're about good. I got a lot of email this past week, and not reading any of them right now because I've got a lot of other things going on in the show, but it was good stuff. I enjoy reading your emails. If you do want to email me, my address is bob@motogpod.com. If you'd like to email Jim Race, Jules Cizek, and myself, all of us together at once, go ahead and send that to motogpod@motogpod.com, and that link's on the website. And if you want to just email Jules, say he's popmonkey@motogpod and Jim Race is race@motogpod.com. So you can email all of us that way. We love hearing from you. We answer all of them, and we also hang out at the rideon2.com forums. And don't forget, now there's a chat room on Rideon2 and MotoGPOD. What's that website again? But chat room at both places, and a chat room at both places, and you can come in and participate. And normally when there's a race on, which we won't have a MotoGP weekend until Brno happens on August 19th, but, you know, we're often hanging out there, and especially, like I said, when there's a MotoGP weekend, I know that Jules and myself, we like to hang out in there, and we'll sort of chit-chat a little bit now and then during the race. It's often kind of confined to, oh my God, did you see that, and stuff like that, but it's still fun stuff. Check that out, chat room at the MotoGPOD.com website, and it's also on rideon2.com, and then there's, and it's the same chat room. It's kind of cool, because the two websites kind of combined together, and there's this neat chat room thing, possibly the least evil use of Flash that I have ever seen. and I liked it a lot. And then, of course, the RideOn2.com forums. If you have not looked at Jules' photos from Laguna Seca, there's links in last week's show. I linked to Jules' website where he's got like all of the photos. And there's also, he put up a bunch of them in the RideOn2.com forum, sort of some of his pics and things. And there's several threads going on. And Tyler Weingartner, another MotoGPOD listener, took some shots. And Tyler had press access, so he had some cool stuff going on. And Jules had this lens that was like a foot and a half long, weighed 25 pounds. So he also got some great shots, and it's good stuff. If you want to see some great shots of Laguna Seca, check it out. I encourage you to. And eventually, I might actually put some of the audio that I recorded at Laguna Seca up on RideOn 2. I sort of threatened to do that and then kind of forgot about it. But if you have an interest for the sounds of MotoGP and you want to hear about it, maybe shoot me an email and I'll see what I can send you. I have an email that I was sending out to a few friends, and I threw in some sounds and all that, and I'd love to send it to you too. So send me an email asking for that stuff with the pictures and the sounds, bob@motogpod.com. And of course, you will hear the sounds on this show occasionally. We played some last week. I've got a new little interstitial bit that I play between the segments, so you'll notice that it's different than it used to be, and the sound is completely different. The sound of these machines is just amazing, folks. When you go there and you're actually at the GP, it's so incredible. And I think I said this in the last show, but I got to reiterate it. When I was there at Laguna Seca in 2005 and at the other races I've been at, I didn't bother with earplugs because, you know, it was loud, but it wasn't like, you know, really uncomfortably loud. It was just sort of normal race loud. When I went this year, I'll tell you, I was wearing those earplugs. My ears hurt. I went down there on Friday, and we were standing at turn four and the practice, and these bikes are going by, and I'm like, oh my gosh, they are so much louder than they used to be. I've got to bring the earplugs for Saturday and Sunday, and so we did. It's good stuff. I'm tending to ramble here a little bit because, as you may or may not know, I record MotoGPOD backwards, and the intro is usually the last thing. And by the time I get to this, it's late in the evening. I might be a little punchy for various reasons, and I tend to ramble. So why don't I stop rambling and stop making a fool of myself and get on with the show? Big news of the week last week was a press release issued by Yamaha Racing that Tech 3 Yamaha MotoGP rider announcement. Tech 3 Yamaha would like to announce that it has secured the services of James Toseland for the 2008 season. The British rider will begin his MotoGP career with a Yamaha factory-supported organization next year. Toseland, who is currently leading the Superbike World Championship by 43 points, has already proved his racing credentials. He was the youngest ever World Superbike Champion in 2004 and is aiming to secure the title once again this season. Blah, blah, blah. Further details, including James's team structure, will be announced in due course. And when we talk to Mark Brax a little bit later in the show, we're going to be hearing some things about that. But this is super interesting news. We've been suspecting that Toseland's going to be moving up to the MotoGP ranks. However, seeing as James has been riding for Honda in World Superbike for so long, we kind of thought he might be moving up to a Honda machine. So it's somewhat of a surprise that he's coming over to Yamaha. The way things are shaken out, the rumors have it that he'll be alongside Guintoli. And I have this, I'm kind of spoiling our Mark Brax interview because that's somewhat where I got some of this information. But nothing has been announced yet. We're looking for more solid information of exactly what the rider lineups are going to be throughout the thing. We're right in the middle of silly season here. I think you're going to see some more stuff at Brno or shortly after Brno of what's going to be happening. But this is for sure. It's been confirmed. It's a done deal. Toseland's coming up, and he's riding for Tech 3 Yamaha next season. Other news, while we're talking about Toseland, is that he crashed out of the Suzuka 8-hour, which happened last weekend. He was riding on a Honda, his teammate Ryuichi Kiyonari, and he managed to get the pole position. Ryuichi started off the first stint, rode for an hour, came back in, Toseland took over, and got about, I think, three laps into it and crashed. And he managed to get the bike back to the pits, but the team decided it was too badly damaged and they had to retire. So that's unfortunate that HRC's sort of premier ride was knocked out of the Suzuka 8-hour, a race that Honda always wants to do well at. Ended up winning was the Yoshimura Suzuki team, and second place was another Honda effort with Carlos Checa riding. Checa's teammate was Tadi Okada, and they went on to take second in the 8 hours at Suzuka there. So kind of a interesting race. Unfortunately, you don't get any coverage of it over here in the United States, so it's a little bit difficult to find good news. I managed to find a few things on crash.net, but so much of it is just the typical quote machine stuff. It's all out there, though, on the internet. If you're interested, look up the Suzuka 8-hour. Nikki Hayden was supposed to be riding in this one and ended up not doing so to concentrate his efforts on MotoGP. And let's see, what else we got going on in the news front? Sylvain Guintoli's going to have an operation for arm pump, the famous sort of condition that's brought about by buildup of blood and lactic acid from working out. And I'm not 100% sure exactly what it is, but apparently it hurts a lot. So Sylvain Guintoli's going to be getting operated on that. Marco Melandri's injury is worse than feared. He actually broke his ankle. He should still be back for Brno, I do believe, but it's might be a little difficult. And it just says all the more for his being able to ride through the pain there and get onto the podium at the Laguna Seca at the U.S. Grand Prix there. So he's we're hoping to see him at Brno. You know, best of luck there. And I haven't had any new news about Tony Elias. The last that we'd heard there was that he was going to be coming for Brno, but him on broken femur and everything. Wouldn't be too surprised if we don't see him. While we're talking about news and things in general, when we mentioned James Toseland a little bit ago, World Superbike this year has been just fantastic stuff. They had the Brno races on the same weekend as Laguna Seca. I watched it this past week. I just was sitting around on the TiVo for a while. Two excellent races with Toseland and Biaggi and Haga just battling it out. I mean, nonstop. Very close finishes. Good stuff. Biaggi and Toseland split the two race weekend there. One of each won one race and came in second on the other race. So kind of cool stuff. That puts Toseland ahead in the championship, ahead of Biaggi. By, I believe it's about 43 points. He, let's see, we've got Toseland on 305, Max Biaggi at 262, Noriyuki Haga at 260, very close to Biaggi. Troy Bayliss at 249, he didn't have a very good weekend. He crashed out of race one and finished sixth in race two. Troy Corser, fifth in the standings of World Superbike at 191 points way back. Had a terrible weekend at Brno, DNF'd both races, so not a good weekend for the Troys. But all in all, like I said, not as tight a follower of World Superbike, but it's been so good this year. Such great racing. They've got Brands Hatch coming up this weekend, so make sure you watch that. It'll be on Speed as usual, and I'm sure it'll be on Eurosport and all the other channels for wherever you live. You might want to make sure of catching that one because that is a classic there at Brands Hatch. So that should do it for some quick news today. Let's get on with the rest of the show here with our Pepsi Challenge. I'm going to digress real quick because remember in the intro how I said I recorded a new interstitial and how different the motorcycles sound. I'm going to play one after the other. So here's the old 990cc bikes followed by the new 800cc motorcycles. And these are basically how they sound. I mean, there's going to be some acoustic differences, but there's no computer tweakery or anything like that. So here we go. Kind of cool, isn't it? One more time. Back by popular demand, it's the Pepsi Challenge. I got quite a few emails saying that people wanted to hear it, and I didn't get any from anybody that says, you know, don't play it again, it's lame. So I figured I'll do it again. It's easy for me. I just kind of go through the three commentaries and find a bit that I think is interesting and put it in there and talk about it a little bit. So it's great stuff, and I'm glad you guys enjoy it. I think it's kind of fun, too. So, of course, for the Laguna Seca race, I've got Eurosport, I've got MotoGP.com, and I've got the Fox commentaries. And, of course, the section I'm going to pick is right there on the first lap when we have the Hayden and Hopkins incident. In fact, what I've done is I've basically taken from where the lights go out and you've got the start all the way through till the end of the first lap. So each section's a little over about a minute and a half long or so. And you'll see some startling differences between the two. I took it pretty easy on Speed TV, Fox, last week when I kind of gave a real quick rundown of what I thought about their commentary. I'm going to talk a little bit more about that when I play their section. But why don't we start off with the MotoGP.com/Dorna commentary with Nick Harris and Gavin Emmett, sort of in commemoration of the fact that we've got Mark Brex on the show here in a little bit. And one thing I want you to pay attention to as you're listening to this is the sound, the audio, and I'm pretty sure this was how it was because I didn't – it's not a problem with the download or anything. But it sounds like Nick Harris is talking inside a trash can. And, you know, this is an easy sort of thing to mess up. Trust me, I know. If your room acoustics are no good, then it sounds really bad and all of that. But it's – I'm not sure what they had going on there. But the audio was quality-wise, technical quality-wise, the audio was crap. It's a lot of clipping air. There was no dynamic range. And like I said, it sounded like Nick and Gavin were talking inside a trash can. So that could have been something that happened between their commentary booth and when Dorna encoded this and made it available for download. Or it could have been something where they had some kind of settings going on wrong in the commentary booth. But whatever, sort of listen to that. And let's go ahead and hear him play that one.
32 laps, the US Grand Prix, round 10 of the MotoGP World Championship. Welcome to California, welcome to MotoGP, and the race is underway. Good start by Pedrosa.
Really good start by Danny Pedrosa. Casey Stoner has got away well, though, and so has Christopher Mueller. Watch Nicky Hayden right round the outside, though, of Casey Stoner. It looks like it's going to be Danny Pedrosa in there first. Stoner just gets in front of Nicky Hayden and pushes Hayden really out wide, and that's John Hopkins who's gone down, and he's pushed Nicky Hayden too wide as well. But Hopkins, a shocking first corner from him, and he's down, and that's really ruined his chances of victory here.
And what has he done to Nicky Hayden as well? Nicky Hayden pushed wide in that one as well. What a disaster. Two Americans in conflict at the top of the pile at turn one. And I think Casey Stoner may have taken the lead from Danny Pedrosa. He has.
Nicky Hayden's right down now in 18th position. What a shocking start from him. He gets pushed out wide, but Casey Stoner has surged to the front. The Aussie has hit the front as he has done in every single session so far this weekend. And he looks like he's going to be very, very hard to beat. They line up the corkscrew for the first time.
What a disastrous first lap for the Americans. Through the corkscrew they come. Stoner leads. Vermeulen in third place. Sandwich between them. Danny Pedrosa. There's the two Kawasakis of Randy Dupuis and Roger Lee Hayden. But it's Nicky Hayden that has suffered so, so badly as John Hopkins went down at turn one. Pedrosa hanging onto the rear wheel of the Ducati there. And Chris Vermeulen is also in the hunt. They know they mustn't let Stoner get away.
Okay, again, as usual, you can see the huge passion and excitement of what they feel about these races and all that, and a very professional, constant sort of stream of chatter, if you want to call it that, and not in a negative way. And that's difficult to do, trust me, it really is. And there's something to be said, yes, for sometimes just let us listen to the motorcycles. But on the other hand, particularly for me, you know, I'm an audio-stimulated kind of guy. I am doing a podcast here, so it's obvious that I do things with listening. It's important to hear, and I just – the way they did it, it's just good stuff. So let's move on. Now we're going to go to Eurosport, which is it's an even a step above the MotoGP.com podcast or commentary, excuse me. And when you hear it, it's just amazing. Listen to Toby. The excitement in Toby's voice with the start of the race was just incredible. And then we got Julian coming in a little bit from Imola. It's all good stuff.
The front row made up of Casey Stoner, Danny Pedrosa and Chris Vermeulen. Ducati from Honda, from Suzuki. Nicky Hayden, America's world champion, is on home soil for the first time with the number one plate. Valentino Rossi needs to win at Laguna for his championship chances. Go! Oh, what a belter for Danny Pedrosa. And what a cracking start for Nicky Hayden. Look at him as he goes around the top and into turn one. And Nicky Hayden may get second position. He's going to get squeezed out by Casey Stoner. They all go wide and they leave the door open.
Oh, they go down.
No, that's John Hopkins who's gone down. Hopkins has gone down at turn one. A disastrous weekend for poor old Hopper of the number 21 Rizla Suzuki. Meanwhile, at the front, we've got Stoner who's managed to get ahead of Danny Pedrosa. Vermeulen is third and the guy in fourth is Colin Edwards.
It is Colin, and then it's the Ducati. There is Tomada well up the front, midfield. That was, well, that Hopper and Toby, to you, fourth
Colin,
place,
fourth.
Colin, the Yamaha, the unfamiliar colour scheme of the Yamaha pushing through to four.
Sorry, Julian, it's got to get through that different colour scheme. Look at the lead from Casey Stoner. The two young pups are battling at the top of the hill. Danny Pedrosa pushed Nicky Hayden for the victory here last year, and he's with him. Now, Pedrosa, even at this point in the race, Randy, looks as if he's being held up even by Stoner.
Yes, very much so. Last week, he was so good when he got the lead, and Jules called that right. They're going to change positions soon, if not right. Oh, very, very close. He's looking for a way around. I think he's got the pace here.
I think you're right. Danny was on the rostrum here last year as a rookie. You're not supposed to be able to do that at Laguna.
Like I said, it's fantastic as always to hear those guys. It's just a fantastic team. Now let's move on to the Fox commentary, which was the team of Ralph Shaheen and Freddie Spencer up in the commentary booth and Greg White down there in the pits. Now, Ralph Shaheen is a real regular on Speed TV. He doesn't typically do the AMA road racing, though. I believe he does the motocross stuff, and he jumps around. He does some of the car racing, this sort of thing. They brought him in kind of as a ringer for the Laguna Seca MotoGP round, and he also did the AMA races there while we were at Laguna Seca. Freddie Spencer is always the color guy. Normally, it's been Greg Creamer this year. They used to have Brian Drebber doing it. Not sure what's going on there, why we don't have Brian Drebber doing the AMA. He's still listed on the Speed TV website. He was actually the on-track announcer there at Laguna Seca, so that was kind of cool to hear him again. Like I said last week, when I mentioned the whole commentary thing, I cut him some slack, and I said they did a better job than CBS, and they did. They did a much, much better job than CBS, but I still have a few kind of complaints going on with the Fox coverage of MotoGP. For starters, let's go ahead and listen to the first lap right off the bat, and then we'll talk about it in a second here. So here we go, starting from roughly the same point where we started with Eurosport and MotoGP.
The riders are all back to their grid positions, and we are set to go with the Red Bull US Grand Prix live on Fox. Second corner comes Danny Pedrosa. Oh, and he goes wide, and we've got trouble. One rider going down, but Nicky Hayden, the American, saved it. That's John Hopkins, the other American, on the Rizla Suzuki down.
What a disappointment for John Hopkins with him and Nicky Hayden getting together. But that cost Nicky because he got a great start from the position that he had on the second row, but Casey Stoner's leading it.
I had talked to Hopkins earlier this morning, Freddie, and he said he so desperately wanted to get a good start. It looked like he was trying so hard, it just backfired as they came to turn two.
Well, Nicky ran a little bit wide, and then, of course, John Hopkins was underneath, and when Nicky came down, they got together. It's unfortunate for both of them. So the only other Repsol Honda rider out there is Danny Pedrosa. He's going to have to carry the banner for Honda.
Into the corkscrew they go for the first time.
Look at the elevation change. As I was saying, it's a blind entrance to that corner, and as the bikes come down, they really have to be careful picking up the throttle.
Stoner leading Pedrosa as we come to the final corner to complete lap number one here at Monster Raceway Laguna Seca.
Now, for all the riders, the key is getting through these first one or two laps. Everybody then will settle down, kind of spread out, and then you'll put your race strategy to work.
All right, so first of all, it was there was a whole lot of silence. We didn't have any commentary at all from the start till almost at turn two. And, you know, Dorna, Nick Harris and Gavin Emmett there at the Dorna MotoGP.com commentary was telling us what's going on. Eurosport was Toby was freaking out and telling us what was going on. And we had kind of stony silence there, you know, and then nice sound of the motorcycles. That's really cool. But it was too quiet on Fox. So, again, a little bit of that kind of dead air thing going on. And it just sort of makes you wonder, are they so wrapped up in watching the race that they're forgetting to talk about it? Well, you know, that's kind of understandable and kind of, you know, I can respect that. But that's unfortunately for them, not their job. They're supposed to be talking. And then the other complaint I had, and this was a kind of a big one, I thought, was that he called, Ralph Shaheen specifically called Chris Vermilion, at least like three times throughout the broadcast. I think every time he said his name, he called him Chris Vermilion. He also said Shinji Nakano instead of Shinya. You know, little things like this. And listen to Freddie Spencer saying Pedrosa, and then later on he says Pedrosa or Pedrosol or something like that. And these are minor complaints, I suppose, unless you're that guy that's named they're massacring. So I felt a little bit like it's almost like they sort of didn't do their homework, and to a point that's somewhat understandable because they're primarily AMA announcers and these guys have to track a lot of names in the AMA and they have to know, you know, whose bike that is, recognize the helmets and all that sort of thing. On the other hand, they've got big giant plain Jane
black on white numbers to recognize an AMA, and you don't have that in MotoGP, so that makes the MotoGP a little bit harder. So maybe they should have possibly done a bit more homework. I mean, they had a busy weekend. Those guys were announcing a lot of races all weekend long, so you know there's reasons for it. I can understand that, but it still happened. Then the other complaint that I had, and I mentioned this one last week and made fun of Greg White big time, was that they dumbed it down too much. Now, that's not their fault. They were most likely basically firmly told to do that by the execs at Fox that, you know, you're going to be showing this motorcycle racing on regular TV. Your average Fox viewer's never even seen a motorcycle before, let alone one going real fast around the track. So that's why we were gifted with fun things like the description of what a foot peg is and all of that. But it wasn't as bad as it could have been. And it was such a huge improvement over the CBS commentary. Sorry, guys at CBS, but you really tanked it on that Sox and Ring race, and it was horrible. But so overall, I don't know. That's what I thought. You know, you're not going to get to that level that Eurosport can do and that Dorna can do without a lot of practice, and it does tend to show through. So I'm pretty happy with the commentary that we get most of the time. I'd like to see a truly tight, well-oiled machine of a team doing, you know, customized American audience MotoGP commentary, much like we get for Formula One with Bob Varsha and Steve Matchett, Dave Hobbs. But with barring that, not getting that, I'm more than happy to hear Nick Harris, Gavin Emmett, Mark Brax do the Dorna commentary when they play that back on speed. Oh yeah, I want to insert one other small complaint that I had about the Fox coverage, and this was also true of the CBS coverage, is the constant barrage of preview commercial type things covering up the race itself to try to get me to watch golf when it was on CBS or the World Series, which is not much better when it was on Fox. And it's, you know, it's like, come on guys, you know, I understand that you've got to promote, you know, other shows and all of that. And you have to tell us that this is MotoGP on Fox 12 times. But, you know, please, just, you know, I'm a motorcycle racing fan. That's why I'm watching motorcycle racing. I don't particularly want to be told about a somewhat boring stick and ball game that's going to be happening sometime in the future while I'm trying to watch my damn race. So thanks to everybody for your feedback about the Pepsi challenges. I'm glad you enjoyed them. I like doing them. And this is probably the last one you're going to be hearing this year, but maybe we'll do it again next year when we have something to compare it to. While on his journeys around the MotoGP paddock at Laguna Seca, Jules Cisic ran into Mark Brax, the pit reporter for the official Dorna MotoGP.com commentary team. He's the Australian voice that you hear down there working from the pits. And Jules struck up a conversation with Mark and got his contact information and hooked me up with a fantastic interview here. So we managed to get a hold of Mark. Jules wanted to be part of this, but unfortunately our schedules just kind of didn't permit it. I had to call Mark during the day while I was at work. That was when Mark could talk to us. So let's listen to what Mark has to say. Hello, Mark. Thanks very much for taking the time to talk to us today.
No worries, Bob. Good to be here.
Let's talk a little bit about you and how you're working there in the as the pit reporter job. How did you get into the business? Did you work with Nick Harris before the 2006 season?
No, not at all. I started off as a photographer, then found out I could make money writing stories, and that was a few years ago. I've been doing it for about 15, 20 years, I suppose. And then about 10 years ago in Australia, they asked me if I wanted to do some commentary, and I got up in the box, and it's gone from there. And I went from doing club racing and national racing, and then got the invite from Phillip Island in Australia to do like the World Superbike round and the Australian Grand Prix round, and just for the track commentary. And they do like a proper television production with super screens everywhere and stuff like that, and everybody was giving me accolades about how good it was, and I decided at the end of 2005 to send an email across to Dorna in Spain, and more just to get the knockback and think that I'd, you know, I had a go sort of thing, and didn't hear anything, and I thought that was it. But then a couple of months later, in January last year, they rang up and said, "Do you want to come and join us?" And I had actually asked the guy if he was Peter Dinkamore, you know, being truthful, because I thought someone was having a go at me, but. It all worked out, then, yeah, from there on, I've just been doing it last year, and this is the second year in. So it's more like my dream job, to say to speak. I reckon I've got the second best job in the world. I haven't got the talent for the best job.
The best job being writer, I take it?
Yeah, Yeah, but then being in the pit lane, you know, you don't have to worry about the only risk you've got is getting run over in the last 10 minutes of qualifying and it all goes silly.
So do you have you developed sort of quite a relationship with the teams and the riders and all of that?
Yeah, well, I knew a lot of them before too, because in the late 80s and early 90s, I was freelancing doing the GPs of trying to break into it, you know, coming over to Europe and stuff and writing stories and taking photos and things and never quite really got it, because then Bernie Eccleston came into it in about 1992 and he basically got rid of all the freelancers as he wanted to do, and I decided to go back to Australia then and try another avenue and stuff. So I knew a lot of them, mainly the team managers and mechanics like Jerry Burgess and all those sorts of guys, Hervé Poncherel from Tech 3. I've known them for a number of years, so when I started doing it in Australia at the track, that was one reason they got me to do the pit lane stuff, because they had a bit of a rapport, and now that's just built, and now that I've been there in their face, well, not in their face, but you know what I mean, there every weekend on the ground, I've got a really good rapport with them. So, yeah, pretty. I think I'm pretty well respected now, which is a bit of a surprise to me, but yeah, so I've got a good rapport, and you can have a chat with them and go and have a beer with them. I don't really hang around them, so to speak, but you know, you might go out and meet them out one night or something like that and have a beer or a meal or whatever, but they're all pretty generally pretty good people.
Yeah, that must make the job quite a bit easier than the fact that you do know them as friends and that sort of thing, so you might be able to get an easier time going on it, I take it.
Yeah, well, I've noticed that with other, you know, like you go to one-off meetings and there'll be a one-off reporter there trying to get interviews, and you just notice a difference that, you know, because you're there, and the more things that you're not going to ask questions that are really going to put them on the back foot, they're just, you know, how's the ride going, and just basically, for want of a better word, intelligent questions that they appreciate instead of getting, like, one jab for breakfast and things like this, I suppose. So it's, yeah, it's a... It's just a matter of knowing the right time to talk to them. Like, even on the grid and, you know, after the qualifying and stuff, you just walk up to them, show them the microphone. You know, don't actually say anything to them if they're in the pit box or on the bike. And if they shake their head or look away, you don't even push it. You just put your hand up and then wander off and find someone else to ask the silly questions to.
So now you probably get a lot of sort of inside information, and there must be a lot of trust between the teams and the riders and yourself. So to not sort of divulge that, is that just a kind of a professional courtesy honor system sort of a thing, or has Dorna sort of laid down guidelines or signed any NDAs or anything like that?
No, Dorna doesn't actually say that. It's more just the trust between the riders and myself, or the team members and myself, to say, like, this is what's going to happen, but don't say anything at the moment. We'll let you know when it happens. And you keep that trust because, as you know, if you go out off the deep end and just be for the sake of getting your name in print to say you've got an exclusive story or something, you're never going to get anything again. So you just got to keep that balanced. There's what you can say, you can allude to things and say there might be a rumour about something happening, but not actually say that it's, you know, going to be a fact or whatever.
Right, right. Perfectly understandable. And then how is it, you mentioned earlier that it was a bit of a dream job, so this kind of ties into that. With all of the travel involved and everything, do you still find that exciting? Is it you know, this great life on the road and all that?
Well, I could have a real job. You know, that's the way I look at it. The fact that, yeah, the travelling and everything, it doesn't really worry me getting on a plane. And so once I'm on a plane and going somewhere, that doesn't worry you. And you're going to see somewhere new all the time. And I'd put it down that it's a new adventure every day is occurring. But the thing that's probably the hardest thing to accept is if you're sitting in a departure lounge 2 hours after you're supposed to be taken off and things like that, there's little things. But, you know, it's... I said that when I went home last year to Australia to a few people, and I didn't get much sympathy for the fact about it, so I don't really say it much anymore. It's, yeah, it's just part and parcel of the job, and if you know, like, I get paid to do something I love, and I think the following through with the passion of what I've got for motorbikes to get where I've got is just the bonus sort of thing, and that's what I say to everybody. If you've got a dream about doing something, chasing it, because there was times in Australia when I was doing freelance work and I was really working hand-to-mouth and stuff, and, you know, you probably know you're struggling to get money and all the rest of it. How being a freelancer, you don't get paid, and sometimes you might be eating the way you should be and things like that, and I've sacrificed a lot of stuff as far as that goes, even including a relationship for it. But I always thought that if I gave it up and went back to my real work, which is aircraft engineering,
I'd be thinking, what if I gave it another 6 months? I'd be thinking about that for the rest of my life. And luckily enough, I stuck with it. And yeah, I real firmly believe if you really got the dream and the passion and the will to do something, to push forward and just see what happens, just like the riders do, I suppose. They had the dream to be a GP rider, and they could be working in a garage or in a, you know, changing wheels if they didn't chase the dream, so to speak. So for doing that and getting there, it is a dream job for me, like to be in amongst it. I've liked bikes all my life. If I wasn't doing bikes, I'd be into surfing or something like that, I think. But the bikes, you know, when you're there on the ground every week, you're in amongst it. And I hope I never lose the buzz every Wednesday or Thursday when we walk into the paddock for the first time. And you get the almost butterflies in your stomach. You get excited about the weekend ahead, and you know, it's something special.
Yeah, do you think that some of the old pros like Nick Harris has been in the sport for so long, do you think he still feels that sort of way on the Wednesdays?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we talk about it a lot, and if he wasn't enjoying it, he wouldn't be doing it. He's been doing it for donkey's years, 30 odd years he's been involved in it and stuff, starting motocross, and basically the same thing. He was started off as an editor for Motorcycle News in England, and then wanted to go out and he started covering motocross, and he wanted to get into GPs, and he did that, and he's got a lot of other stuff for the BBC and stuff, and yeah, he's just the same thing. Now, I think everybody in that paddock is there because they really love the bikes, not because they have to be there or anything, and if they didn't like it, they wouldn't be there, because it's a pretty, they say like there's a big graveyard, a first year attempt, these sort of thing, that had 1 year and couldn't handle it, the travelling and just living out of suitcases and hotels, and it is a pretty itinerant lifestyle, and I think you really got to enjoy it to get the most out, particularly in our job. If me and Nick aren't enjoying it, I think that would come through in the commentary. It would be a bit lethargic, and you wouldn't have that enthusiasm that you need to, you know, to put forward how good it is to be there and how exciting the sport really is.
That's one thing I've always enjoyed about your guys' commentary, is that you can feel the passion coming through, and you do a good job of sort of communicating that this is a sport that you enjoy, and you're not just there picking up a paycheck, and I've always liked that.
Yeah, it's the start of a GP, standing there hanging over pit lane, I actually take the earplugs out and lose a few decibels of hearing just for the sake of that sound. It's those 19 or 20 bikes sitting on the grid on the rev limit are ready to take off. Just the ground shakes and the hairs on the back of the neck still stand on, and I get a, you know, stirring and a tummy lump in my throat. I just reckon it's one of the best feelings you could ever experience.
Do you have a favorite track or circuit that you've done out of the ones so far, for, you know, for whatever reason?
As far as the riders track, I reckon Turkey would have to be the best one, but unfortunately that's been dropped from the calendar next year because of the politics with Bernie Eccleston and the fact that we've got another Grand Prix in America this year, and one had to go, which to me was unfortunately Turkey, because it's a really good track. It doesn't come across on television how the difference in elevation, like I started, first time I went there, turn one, I started calling that the Turkish corkscrew, because it's a blind entry left-hander, and it just drops away into nothing, and then you're up a hill again, and it's the downhill section into that back straight and everything like that. It is something sensational. Stand there at that corner at that fast right-hander on the back straight, where this year they were just backing off the throttle a bit to settle the front to tip it into the corner, where Rossi ran off on the first lap going in there a bit too hot. That would have to be one of the most sensational bits of real estate in the world. But saying that too, Bob, there's every track's got its own character. Like Laguna Seca, you get the corkscrew, for instance. You know, there, Phillip Island will always be a favourite because it's my home track in Australia, because it's so fast and another rider's track. But Donington, Crane of Curves, that's another one to look at. But as far as atmosphere and everything, and to look at a track, Turkey. And, well, sorry, atmosphere is not the right word. The Spanish tracks have got the atmosphere with 100,000 people there on race day. That's another special occasion.
Yeah, and we are here at MotoGPOD are definitely mourning the loss of Turkey off of the calendar, because I've said it before, that's my favorite of the new large Formula One-style tracks.
Yeah, it's amazing that the guy that designed that also designed China and Malaysia, and there is, pardon the expression, but flat as a ship carter's hat, so to speak, and they've got no real emotion put to it, where this guy saw Turkey in the hills and he thought, we can build a racetrack here. And it's just, yeah, he built something really good. But unfortunately, because Eccleston's taken it over and the price he was charging and all the rest of it, we've had to forego it. I'd rather go there than China, to tell you the truth. Because besides Turkey, the track itself, you've got Istanbul and the country and the people and the history of the places. The people are really friendly. Yeah, it just all added up to a marvellous Grand Prix. That was probably my favourite place of going on the whole entire calendar, which may seem strange because a lot of people think of Turkey as a bit of a third world country.
How do you, when you talk about, you mentioned Laguna, and we've heard from so many people that Laguna is completely different, how the fans have so much easy access to the paddock and it's not all just tickets for VIPs and that sort of thing. What are your thoughts on that?
Can get a bit hectic like this with the amount of people in there, but then again, saying that, they only let 50,000 people into the track, I'm led to believe, because that's the capacity of it. But if they had a bit more, the riders get a bit, mad at it or upset, but it just gets a bit in your face at times, because everywhere they walk, there's people everywhere. I don't mind it myself, but the riders like to... They're there to do a job, and they're really good. They're not like the megastars of NFL or ice hockey or baseball or anything like that. As you probably saw on the weekend, being there a couple of times yourself, you see that they're pretty amicable. Like Rossi will stand there for 10 minutes, 15 minutes and trying to sign everybody's autograph. Because in Europe, they're a lot more separated. It is for the VIPs and stuff, but there's two sides of the coin. If you cut the people off from seeing it, then they might lose interest in the sport. But then if you let them in and let them get that autograph, then they're going to go away with a big smile on their face telling people how good it is. So you've got to try and balance it out. And I know there's movements afoot to try and make it a bit more exclusive for the paddock, to try and get more sponsors into the sport to have that Formula One sort of atmosphere. But you've got to be really careful how you make the balance with, you know, to have that access for people. And at the same time, keeping the riders not isolated from it all, but just a bit, especially around race day, they've got to be a bit, I suppose, isolated to a certain extent, but not that they're out of everybody's reach. I think that's half of all concern, because we've seen where sports have gone, well, even in Australia, you know, with rugby league and cricket and stuff, the fans never really get close to the heroes, which I think is a bit sad. And you see guys pushing away kids that want an autograph, and I think that's really sad, because then you've just destroyed a kid's dream about what he liked about that particular sportsman.
Did you get people coming up to you at Laguna Seca that perhaps recognized your voice or saw you and said, "Hey, Mark"?
That actually is very surprising, because it wasn't they recognised my head, because they tell me I've got a good head for radio, so you don't see it too often. But as far as, people, I'll be talking to guys, because as you know, there's a lot of Aussies in the AMA paddock over here, and it's like a bit of a mini homecoming to me to catch up with Matt Maladden and Doyley and his crew and guys that work on Kawasaki, Aaron Gobert, who races for the Honda team and stuff. So you always make a point of going down there and seeing them a couple of times during the day to see how their guys are going, because to me, it's a buzz to see them working, like for mate of mine, Roscoe Nearpass. It's the engine builder for the Monster Kawasaki team, really close with Roger Leehade, and comparing what he reckons of Roger Lee to what I reckon of Nicky and stuff. And I'm there talking away, and people are coming up and going, "Oh, you're the guy on speed." And I'm going, "Well, no, I'm not really on drugs, but yeah, I know what they're doing. I'm having a bit of a joke with them and stuff." And it's rather surprising, the people of celebrities right through to punters that actually recognise your voice and really enjoy what we do on the speed. It's just been a bit of a pity at the moment for them. They were just relating the fact that there's CBS have taken it over for a few races, and they were having trouble tracking down where it was for the last couple of years it's been on speed, then all of a sudden it's gone on it. Was it CBS, I think it was, and they were finding it hard to track down. But very humbling and very surprising that people actually recognise the voice and take the time to come up and say good day, which I find, it's a bit of a boost to the ego, and I still have a bit of a chuckle on the other side of my face, because I think there's more important people to be talking to than myself.
It's like you say, though, it's a dream job for you. I think also for a lot of other people, it's a bit of a dream job, so they want to talk to you about that. Talking about the races that have shown up this year on CBS, which we had three on CBS this season, and then Laguna Seca was broadcast on Fox. So that means a total of four races in the United States showed up on broadcast television where everybody can see it rather than on cable television on speed. What are your sort of thoughts on that as far as what's it going to do for the sport here in the United States?
Well, I think you're going to always get your hardcore guys that want to go to speed and watch it. But on CBS, you might get someone that flicks across and sees it for the first time and goes, "What's this sort of thing?" I think it's good for the sport actually be getting it on the mainstream, and it shows the response of what getting MotoGP back to Laguna has done, that actually to find a network like CBS that is actually interested in showing the GP. Maybe it's not live because of the time difference between here and Europe, but at the same time, you're opening up to a real big market of people, and I just hope that they can give it the attention it deserves and promote it the way it should be, because as you probably guess, it's the most exciting sport on the planet, and that's what you need to get across. And that's what, like you said, we put it across and people actually listen to it, because the guys are getting excited watching it. So I think that's what they've got to be really promote for next year if they're going to do it. I believe Fox are going to try and get it on there next year or whatever. So it'll just be interesting to see. But, you know, like, it's getting a mainstream television. There was a lot more local interest there in the press, I saw in the newspapers and stuff, even in US Today and papers that never really covered MotoGP before. They've actually picked up the ball now. And going to Indianapolis next year, I think it's just, it's another step forward for the sport in this country. It's really good.
Sure, it's great stuff. Have you ever been to Indianapolis yourself yet?
No. As far as I'm concerned, the things that I found there have got too many wheels, so hopefully next year I'll still have the job and be able to get back to it. But saying that, I've always followed the Brickyard from when I was a kid. My original interest was in cars when I was Formula One when I was a kid and stuff. And even in Australia, the Indy 500 has always had that aura to it about the race of any race on the calendar in America, you know, the open wheelers and the old footage you used to see from years gone by, the old Offenhauses and things like that, and AJ Foyt and guys like that, the Unser brothers and things like that. There's still a lot of people in Australia know about it. And if you were going to go to a race in America, I'd say there'd be Indianapolis or Daytona that a lot of Aussies would want to hit to. So for next year, I think I'm looking forward to it. They've done a lot of work with it. I believe they've already got the merchandising ready. They're doing a few other fixing the track up now that Formula One's disappeared from it. It'll be just, I hope we get a decent crowd, because 400,000 people, their packs are drawn out, but I reckon even 100,000 people is going to look a bit bare. Do you think that's the case?
It's hard to say. I mean, it depends upon where they seat them and how they do it, you know, because that's one thing, you know, when you're watching it on television, you don't want to see a bunch of empty grandstands. And, so that's just going to ask you, do you think it's going to be a big draw? Is Indianapolis, the town, enough to also justify where you're going to get people flying in from Australia to sort of combine a MotoGP weekend with going to that area of the country, you know, or that sort of thing? You're not sure what you think about that.
Well, I think it could happen, and plus it's closer for people to get to from Europe, and also just more locally for people from the East Coast that wouldn't or couldn't afford the time and the effort to get over here to Laguna. But they're going to say, oh, Indianapolis, it's only, like, I've really got to look at the map to find out. I think it's near the Great Lakes and everything, isn't it? So it's closer to that area and another demographic that can open it up. And I think with the history that Indianapolis has got, and if it's promoted that the first race was a motorcycle race and they're coming back 100 years later, I think you're going to get that snowball effect of a bit of a pilgrimage to go and see where it all started in the States. And if it's promoted the right way, I think you can get a really good crowd here. And from what I believe, the people at Indy are really professionals in what they want to do and how they want to promote it. So I think, given the time frame now that we've got, another year before it's here in September, I think September the 14th next year or something, I think if they start promoting it early, and you've got, it'll be on the back of Laguna, it's only a couple of months, so it's not a big gap of, I think a race in America once a year was too big a gap, because you lose that momentum, everybody forgets about it, because from what I can gather, it's a NASCAR country as far as motorsport goes. Even Formula One really struggle, and that's one reason they're not coming back on them, I presume. So you just, if it's 2 months, like Laguna will be July, then you've got 2 months of September. There'll be still that momentum, and if the press and the mainstream press and the television can keep punching it up, I think you'll get a good crowd there. But it's all the same as, you know, mate, if you don't promote it, no one knows about it. That's the thing that's the most important thing about it.
Right, and that'll be remain to be seen. I think one thing, and this is I heard from a couple of people, is that, you know, Indianapolis, they've been putting on the races there for 100 years, and they do know how to build a fan experience.
You've got the winner's circle and all that, and they've even got part of the old Brickyard. I saw them, I'm still in California having a bit of a holiday after the race at Laguna, and they were promoting a NASCAR race there last week, and they've still got a bit of the old track there. I think that's on the start line, the Brickyard itself. So, you know, it's they certainly know how to do it, the winner's circle and all that hype that goes with it. And you guys are good at promoting stuff, I know that. And with Red Bull behind it, I think that's another bonus to help push it along as well.
Right, right. I think, you know, I had misgivings about the track itself, but I think the venue is excellent. And actually, the news that they've about the track that they're doing has eased my fears quite a bit, which I don't know. Have you seen the track layout?
I only saw the track layout in Cycle News a couple of issues ago, I think it was in. And it looks like it's almost a Formula One design with the constant radius corners and stuff. And the only thing I'm looking at when you see the infield is how much of the pit lane and everything or the pits is going to block the spectator view, or actually going to build purpose-built stands so that people can be really close to the track. That'd be another thing, because if you're going to be on the outside of the pit straight and the banking, like, the bikes would be like ants running around the infield, I suppose.
And these are the things that I've been a bit concerned about myself. I do believe they are putting something in the infield. And also the real good news, I thought, was that they're eliminating that turn one banking by building another corner within the infield, sort of a dent. I think that's all good stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It should be good. I'm looking forward to it. And hopefully I've got a job next year to come back to. But it'll be a good effort. And that's to go a long way to beat Laguna, too. I think they've really lifted the game here in the last couple of years, too.
Good. Super. I'm glad that it's working out and the things. Now, talking of next year, the news has just come out that Toseland is signed for Yamaha next year. What are your thoughts on that?
Bit of a surprise, actually. But I thought because he was going to be locked in with Honda. But I think crashing in three laps in Suzuka at Honda's biggest race of the year didn't do his prospects any good for employment for next year. And I know Hervé Poncharello has been talking to him for a while. They'll be on, they'll be on Michelin tyres next year. That hasn't been confirmed, but there's been plenty of talk about the lack of progress made with the Dunlop tyres, but that could be another paddock rumour. But I don't think Toseland will be coming to Yamaha without having competitive tyres under him for the year. And I think it's good for the sport, it's good for England, because they do need someone to get their arse in the gear, so to speak, because, well, I joke that besides Nick, I've got a couple of other English in the Dorna set up with Gavin Emmett and a few, and it's been an ongoing joke that there's been a long time between drinks for the British and the English fans to have someone up there that they can actually root for, so to speak. So it'd be good to see James up there. He's a really good kid, a good musician, plays a piano like Beethoven and a bit of rock and all the rest of it. So I think he'll be good for the paddock. He's pretty down to earth, and be interesting to see who his teammate is. There's all these, it is a really silly season at the moment, but at least it's starting to, you know, line up now with Hopkins going to Kawasaki, Pedrosa probably starting with Honda with Nicky Hayden, which hopefully they'll build a bike instead of a dog for next year, and hopefully they can get competitive as well. But Toseland and Yamaha should be pretty good.
Yeah, and then also we've got Lorenzo coming up to Yamaha as well, correct?
Yeah, well, he's, from what I've been led to believe there, he's going to have his own team, one rider team under Fortuna sponsorship, the Spanish cigarette company. And that goes back in part of what happened a couple of years ago. You might remember the Gulwars with Rossi. There was a big hubbub there when they pulled out a sponsorship. Well, Yamaha pulled their sponsorship and went to Camel, and there was a lot of court cases, and I think this is part of Yamaha's to Altidus, the mother company of Gulwars and Fortuna, to say, there you go, there's your team. And because I'm also told that Rossi didn't want Lorenzo in his team, which hopefully has saved Colin Edwards' MotoGP career. Lorenzo could put a few noses out of joint, because his antics after the race, you might have seen on the 250 coverage, he's getting out there like a bit of a rock star and doing his own few antics that said, oh, you know, that's not good, blah, blah, blah. But I keep saying that, well, wasn't there a particular Valentino Rossi that did that from the 125, getting blow-up dolls on the back of his bike and disappearing into toilets and having his own personality? I myself think it's great, because it's giving personality to the sport and actually showing these guys that they're not robots on a bike, that they can actually go out and have a bit of fun. And I think Rossi is now starting, he's got Casey Stoner now with Lorenzo coming up. He's only, 21, I think he is. The reputations don't mean anything like they did in the old days. And Lorenzo coming up in his own team, Rossi feeling a pressure from Stoner, then he'll have next year, he'll have Hopkins on the Kawasaki, Nicky hopefully back again. Chris Vermeulen on the Suzuki and a Camilleri on the Ducati besides Stoner, I think there's going to be one hell of a season. And Lorenzo in there with a mix with another couple of 250 riders. I think we're going to, every year we say this is the best season yet, but I think next year's even going to be another step above.
Yeah, we do say that every year, don't we? So any thoughts on that whole thing of who might be riding alongside Toseland then? If it does work out that Lorenzo's on his own team, we still have Rossi and Edwards, who's going to be with Toseland?
Well, there's rumours that Colin Edwards was going to go sideways over there, and then Rossi was going to get someone else with Lorenzo in there. And Chris Vermeulen was also talking to Yamaha as well about moving in there. But Chris has decided, and money had nothing to do with it, Chris has decided to stay with Suzuki because he believes that he's got a good chance for the championship. But there is a, like, there's a couple of riders coming up from the 250 ranks. Alex De Angelis, who's on the Aspar Martinez Aprilia at the moment, who's, I think he's second or third in the championship. He is coming up. He told me that he's 99% sure, so he could slip in there. Andrea Dovizioso is another one that could be coming up from 250s as well. He's on the Honda at the moment, so he's could be going to the Cassini team. But there's still a few rider movements that have got to be filled out. And I think when we get the Bruno in Czechoslovakia in a couple of weeks, or the Czech Republic, pardon me, the new name for it, I think we'll have a few more ideas about who's going to go where, because Carlos Checker should be out of a ride, but he's always got money behind him, so he can get a ride there. Roger Lee Hayden, there's rumours about him, but he'll stick with Kawasaki because I believe he's got a contract next year. Ben Spies, he's going to have another year off with AMA. So there's a few there that I think whoever fills these roles is going to be there for the short term. And I wouldn't be surprised if Ginterly stays there next year because he's a Frenchman in a French team. And for a rookie in his first year, he hasn't done too bad coming off the 250s. And the performance he's put in with Dunlop tyres has been pretty remarkable. Tomata, I would be very, very surprised if he stays here with his efforts. Maybe that effort at Laguna might have saved him, but I don't think so. But I wouldn't be surprised if Ginterly is the one that stays on the Yamaha for next year with besides Toseland.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense then, yeah. What about any thoughts on Nakano on LCR?
The rumour is that Lucio Ceccanello is going to get the Konica Minolta sponsorship. And they'll combine it. Instead of Honda supplying two teams, I'll only have to supply one team now. So then Lucio's supposed to take this sponsorship, which will be good because he's got a good set of workers with him, and get another young gunner, Shinya Nakano. He's disappointed a lot of people because he's probably the worst career move he did was leaving Kawasaki at the end of last year to go to this Honda. And everybody thought the Honda was going to be a world beater. Him, Checker, they all did. On Michelin tyres, they thought, we'll only have to turn up and we'll be competitive. But they haven't. It's been the biggest disappointment of the year. And it's no reflection on Shinya's riding talent either. It's just the fact that Honda are not letting the parts go from, the factory team into any of the other teams. They're not getting a chassis. Like, Shinya's racing a bike he started the year with no modifications. And it must be very frustrating for him. Plus, these new 16-inch Michelin front tyres they're using, getting your head around that with the corner speeds that they needed. But Shinya, runner-up in a 2002 250cc World Championship, he knows he's how to get around the track pretty well. And, well, these people write them off, but no one loses their talent that fast. So maybe he'll have a lifeline next year to stay in the GP class.
Interesting, yeah. Speaking of lifelines and Honda support and all that, what about Team KR?
Oh, that is tragic. That is a really sad turn of events. Finishing sixth last year, and Kenny Jr. nearly won the Portuguese Grand Prix, except for a mix-up with his lap boards last year, and he won it the lap before he should have, sort of thing. And to see your team go from a competitive podium finish from nearly every race towards it, like from Barcelona on last year, they were up there, and the work that team puts in and the money Kenny spends and everything, it's just really sad. And they've been trying everything. They haven't even got any bits. I think from what Chuck Axlin tells me, the engine they got at the beginning of the year was like the first prototype of the 800s from Honda, and that's what they've been stuck with. And no matter what frame they build or swing arms, and they got a few parts for Laguna, but it's all too little too late. And look what it's done to Kenny Roberts Jr. It's basically put him into retirement. He said to me at Laguna that, he said, why am I going to go and bust my ass on a bike that I know is uncompetitive when I know I can beat the likes of Edwards, Rossi, Stoney? Said, I've beaten all those guys in the past. Give me the right bike and I can beat them. And It's really sad for a private manufacturer like Kenny Roberts and the work they put in. I don't know if you got up close and had a look at it on the weekend at Laguna, but the engineering of the bike and everything is just sensational. They put so much work in, and to be struggling around in 19th, like the times that Kenny's doing this year were 1.5, 2 seconds slower than what he was doing last year, and they're supposed to be going quicker through corners and everything, that breaking lap records and stuff. So I reckon it's a real tragic set of circumstances, particularly when you see that they got new sponsorship into the team with the Treasure Island Casino in Las Vegas and stuff, and hopefully Kenny Roberts Sr. isn't that disillusioned that he will come back next year, but I wouldn't be surprised if he's not here.
Okay, yeah, I do hope to see them back as well. Well, it's been fantastic talking with you, Mark. We really enjoyed having you on the show, and hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Yeah, anytime you want to call, mate, no worries. I'll gladly talk to you.
All right, well, definitely have to keep your number on file and add you in, and then we're looking forward to hearing you back on for us on Speed TV when we get the Dorner commentary.
No worries. I'm glad you appreciate it. It's good to hear that someone likes what we're doing, and I like coming over here. Everybody seems to be really friendly. That's why I've stayed here a couple of weeks. I really enjoy the country. So hopefully we'll be back next year bigger and better.
All right. Thanks a lot.
No worries.
Thanks again to Mark Brax for being on the show. We really enjoyed having him. It was a great call. I thought it went real well. And thanks again to Jules for organizing it and doing the legwork to get that to happen. And if you liked what Mark had to say and you thought he was an interesting guy, why don't you read the columns that he writes on bikeme.tv. It's an Australian website, bikeme, bikeme.tv. And of course, I will put a link on the MotoGPOD.com website for that, but you can find it there. Just go to bikeme.tv and look at their articles, kind of do a search for Brax. You'll find all kinds of stuff. It's a fairly regular feature that he writes up there, some really interesting stuff. So I hope you enjoyed that, and thanks again to Jules and Mark. That's going to do it for today. Hope you enjoyed the show. Now, as promised, we have a contest. I like contests. Contests are cool. I have quite a few of these really cool posters that a friend of MotoGPOD, Mark Callan, sent me. Mark Callan used to publish the City Cycle News in New York City magazine. It's a really cool little magazine that he used to publish, and now he is a freelance writer and photographer. He's got a great blog at writerscramp.com. I encourage you to check that one out, writerscramp.com. My only complaint with it, Mark, if you're listening, is that you don't update it often enough. Your last post was quite a while ago. So put in some more of your stuff. They're good stuff. It's entertaining to read, and I encourage you to check that out. Mark's also got a website for his photography, markcallan.com, and he's got a video blog, all kinds of good stuff. Check that out. There's links from writerscramp.com, and of course, there will be a link at motogpod.com. But this poster, Mark sent these to me before I shipped out to Iraq last year, and it kind of fell through the cracks, and I sort of forgot about it, but Mark reminded me of them, and so we're going to give some of them away. It's a really cool poster, a print of an original painting by Hector Cadamartori, who is a famous motorsports artist, and this is a cool-looking picture of Eddie Lawson riding his Yamaha YZR 500 around Laguna Seca in Monterey, California, including where he won many races throughout his career, including the 1988 United States Grand Prix. I am reading this off the poster, by the way. Eddie Lawson, four-time FIM 500cc world champion. And it is a cool poster. This is it's a big poster. It's 28 inches by 22 inches. It's printed on really high quality paper. It's cool stuff, nice art. It'll look great on the wall of your den or your bedroom or living room or wherever it is that you choose to hang your motorsports posters and stuff like that. We're going to give away 6 of them. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to make it easy on you. So send me an email to contest@motogpod.com. Send that email before midnight on the night of August 15th or the morning of August 16th, depending on how you look at it. Midnight Pacific time, U.S. Pacific time, is the deadline. Send that email, contest@motogpod.com, and in that email, tell me how many races, how many MotoGP races in 2006 were won on a Yamaha. Tell me how many race wins did Yamaha get in the MotoGP class in 2006. Send it to contest@motogpod.com. Out of all of the correct answers, I will pick 6 names, and I will send you this really cool poster. I mean, it really is a cool poster. And I will send that to you for free, for gratis. I will pick up the charges on mailing. This is your contributions and things to MotoGPOD.com at work, folks. When your contributions, I can do cool things like this. So don't forget, check out Mark's website, riderscramp.com. Send me an email at contest@MotoGPOD.com before August 15th. Tell me the number of race wins that Yamaha had in the MotoGP class in 2006. I'll maybe pick your name out of the hat or on the Excel spreadsheet or however I do my randomization, and we will send those out. Make sure you include your address too in the email. Kind of helpful. So we're done for the day. Thanks again to Jules. Thanks again to Mark Brax, Mark Callen, Hector Cardamatori, everybody that makes MotoGPOD possible. I do appreciate it. And until next week, we'll talk to you later. And do not forget to watch Brands Hatch and World Silly Bikes this weekend. Not World Silly Bikes anymore. It's World Super Duper Bikes. And they are Brands Hatch. So it's good stuff. Catch that. And until then, we will talk to you next week. I often try to think of something sort of entertaining to do for this disclaimer, and I actually had a pretty good idea a while ago, and it's completely escaped me. I have no idea what it was, so I'm just going to read it. MotoGP is a trademark of Dorna Sports SL, the MotoGPOD podcast, and MotoGPOD.com, which is Bob's website, are not affiliated with Dorna Sports SL, or Hector Cadamatori, or World Superbikes, or Pepsi, or any of the other things or trademarks that we've ever talked about. And all those trademarks and any other trademarks are the property of their respective owners, and MotoGPOD.com is not affiliated with any of them.